And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you today. We are going to be talking about so much stuff. There's actually so much news that my news segment is probably going to go run a little long. The deep dive segment is going to be called Trust Sucks. And that is actually a rehash of a TED Talk I gave in May. And so I hope you guys really enjoy that. I'm going to be answering audience questions. You'll get a tip of the week. Please, please stick around. We have an action-packed hour. And as always, we start with the news. And in Amazon news, and I think a lot of us are using Amazon, but what a lot of people don't realize is that Amazon has over 500,000 employees worldwide. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, and I mean, we're not talking about their automation or their sales or anything, is that how they are handling employee terminations and employee concerns is actually very fascinating. And recently, Bloomberg had an article about a woman, an Amazon employee named Jane, and the name has been changed to protect her. She basically got called in front of her manager and the human resources representative with a document outlining the concerns of her work performance and spelled out three choices. She could quit and receive severance. She could spend the next several weeks trying to keep her job by meeting certain performance goals, or she could square off with her manager in a video conference version of what Bloomberg is calling the Thunderdome, pleading her case with a panel of coworkers while her boss argued against her, basically creating an internal jury system for deliberations. And so Jane, the fake-named Jane, chose the last one. And so she actually went in front of a panel with her, in front of, I guess, her coworker peers and her boss to plead her case, which is absolutely fascinating because usually this isn't what happens here. And so this begs the question, is this actually a fair, jury by your peers if you're working with these people? I mean, maybe you don't have a good relationship with them. Maybe they're mean. Maybe they're great. Maybe they're sympathetic. Who knows, right? And so I don't necessarily know if this is fair, but I think it's really interesting. And I think it kind of sparks a discussion and conversation about, one, rights workers have, and two, if Amazon is, really, really onto something here, or if they are seriously, seriously undermining, their staff's ability, their employees' ability to have their case fairly arbitrated. So we'll see where this goes. But with 500,000 employees, I think it's very fascinating that Amazon is attempting to roll out something like this and actually doing it. So I'll keep you informed if that if something else happens. But that is your Amazon news of the week. And I, quite frankly, I think that's just rather interesting. I actually don't know where I fall on this. I can see both sides. So if you've got a thought on this, let me know, because I'd be curious to hear from you on it. And in government news, the state of California just royally ticked off most of Silicon Valley. And for us rank and file regular people, that's probably a very good thing. Now, what happened was Governor Jerry Brown, governor of California, last week signed a bill into law that basically is a mirror, almost a mirror, at least on the surface, of the European Union's GDPR. Now, what this means is that basically, if you are a citizen of California, and by 2020, this is going to go into effect by 2020. If you're a citizen of California and you are using a platform online, like let's say Facebook or Google or Twitter, take your pick. Basically, you now have the same rights as an EU citizen in the sense that you can go to the Facebooks of the world and basically say, okay, I need to know what data you have on me, what you've done with it, and I have the right to delete all of that data from your system, as I see fit. And that is a huge, huge shift. Now, obviously, all of Silicon Valley is against this. And this law applies to pretty much any app platform or any social media platform or any app that is publicly available that has over 50,000 users or more. And so that obviously more than covers, the Facebooks of the world, Google, Twitter, et cetera. And that's a huge thing. Now, the fine, if they don't do this by 2020, and again, this has just been signed into law, is that it is $7,500 per incident. And when you're looking at the entire state of California being the most populous state in the union, you know, and let's say you've got, I don't even know how many people are in California, what, 20 million, 30 million, something like that. Most of them are going to be on some kind of social media. And if they want to, you know, remove their data, see their data, et cetera, from a big thing, that is going to be $7,500 times millions and millions, which is absolutely ridiculous. Basically, it is forcing them to do that. And if they're going to do that for California, they might as well just roll it out nationwide, since they've already been forced to make these changes for the European Union, and they're still scrambling for that. And while some have already said it's probably just going to be easier for them not to be available in the European Union because they don't want to deal with all the GDPR laws, if that is coming to California and probably other states as well that will follow suit, then they're going to have to bite the bullet and actually do it. So that's a huge win for privacy advocacy, just normal people and all that. And it is a serious loss for the major platforms for social media out there, which, quite frankly, in my opinion, is a very good thing, because we have been lacking, privacy. And if you're looking at it, a good chunk of Silicon Valley basically derives their revenue from data mining us, whether it's for advertising, marketing, analytics, you know, improving their AI, whatever that is. They are making money off of us by giving us a free platform with which to collaborate and enjoy at the expense of our privacy and our data mining. So this kind of pulls that back, and we're actually going to see how this starts to transform the business model that all of these companies are using, because if they can't data mine us for free, are they going to start billing us? And if that's the case, then, well, you know, are their platforms going to be sustainable in the long run? You know, and you could argue we need social media. It's integrated into, you know, essentially the social fabric of who we are right now. But, you know, does it have to be in this manner? So we're going to see where this goes. But for right now, California just handed us little folk a big, big win. And in cyber heist news, one of the largest heists in the history of, well, bank heists, money heists, whatever you want to call it, is still actually underway. Now, if you haven't heard of a group called the Carbonac Gang, they continue to strike. And what ended up happening is, a short while ago, they hit 41 ATMs simultaneously and had people there basically to collect the money as it was spinning out and then take off. And the reason why we know that this gang is still active is, on the last major heist that they had, one of the people dropped their bank card, and a couple that had noticed them basically extracting all the money that was spitting out of the ATM machine before they grabbed everything and took off, picked up the card and notified the authorities to this, and they traced it back to the Carbonac gang. And this is continuing to go on and on. And they continue to use banking trojans and other remote access capability to attempt to hit banks worldwide and steal cash and a ton of currencies all over the map. And so these guys are currently being hunted by local, federal, you know, nation authorities, as well as Interpol, etc. But it's interesting to see continue on, because I think this underscores the point that a lot of banks worldwide are not really ramping up the cyber defense like they should. And we are living in a time where we are seeing the largest wealth transfer in history happen. By 2021, we, meaning you, me, nation states, everybody, corporations, you name it, will have spent collectively over $1 trillion defending ourselves against hackers like this. And conversely, by 2021, those hackers will have extracted $6 trillion illegally from the world. So this is absolutely massive. And the Carbonac gang is one of those ones that is perpetuating this and continuing to do so. We're going to continue to see, more from them. And as this continues to unfold, I will definitely keep you up to date here, because even though it's illegal and these guys are jerks, it's actually rather fascinating how they've been able to get away with this on a global scale, collecting literally millions and millions of dollars, every time they do some type of massive, very coordinated attack around the world. So we'll see where that goes. And for all I know, in 10 years, they're going to be, Steven Spielberg movies. So I will keep you informed to that as well. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in Department of Homeland Security news, and they've been in the news recently because the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristian Nielsen, and she's been in the news with the whole immigration thing, and we've all seen the pictures online separating families and stuff, and that is not, I repeat, not what we are talking about today. That's not really cybersecurity-based right now, but basically, they came out, the Department of Homeland Security, Kristian Nielsen came out and basically said, we are cracking down on hackers more than the Department of Homeland Security did under the Obama administration. Now, what she said is, this is one of the, quote, and I quote, this is one of those areas where deterrence has to be clear. We will no longer stand by while nation states attack the government or our private sector entities. For so long, we've had these attacks. It's taken us over a year to attribute it in some cases. Then you attribute it and nothing happens. And so basically what she's saying is we are going to be stepping up the defense, possibly proactive defense, which is another bit of news as well, against rogue states or state-sponsored hacking. So Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of this actually started to counter this under the Obama administration. So in 2014, Obama's Department of Justice brought the first U.S. charges of cyber espionage against a nation state with the indictment of five Chinese military officers. And in March of this year, the Department of Justice under the Trump administration indicted nine Iranian hackers for stealing several terabytes worth of data from U.S. government agencies, companies, and universities. And so we will hopefully see the Department of Homeland Security taking a more proactive role in cyber defense. I hope that Secretary Nielsen is actually correct. And what gives me a lot of pause is that in the Trump administration, since his inauguration, since basically he became president in the beginning of 2017, we've seen some critical key cybersecurity, cyber warfare personnel actually resign, leave, or be fired from the administration, and that's a serious problem. So our National Infrastructure Council, for example, in 2017, lost basically eight members, that which dealt with data technology, cybersecurity, et cetera, including chief data scientist DJ Patil, which was a serious blow to our infrastructure defense strategies. And then later on, we saw the basically the White House cybersecurity coordinator. That person was originally from the NSA and is there to kind of act as a cybersecurity bridge for the White House to other government agencies, not to mention developing a cyber defense strategy for the executive branch, basically was essentially fired. He went back to the NSA, the White House saying that they no longer needed the role, that it was going to be folded into for streamlining purposes of the Department of Homeland Security, which brings us back to the statements that I just read you from Secretary Nielsen. So hopefully we will actually see some cyber defense strategies being delivered. But again, losing those key critical personnel, I'm hoping that that is not going to be a deterrent for this, because thus far, most people in the cybersecurity world have been rather concerned that the U.S. government hasn't been taking this seriously. So hopefully this isn't lip service and we'll see where we go from here. But that is your Homeland Security news of the week. And in possibly altering the internet forever news, basically 2 weeks ago or so on a Wednesday, the EU, the European Parliament's Committee on Legal Affairs, basically voted to ratify something they called Article 13. Now, what this would do is it would make memes illegal. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the term meme, I'm sure we've all been on social media or, you know, wherever, and we've seen, let's say, a famous picture and we've got, you know, some funny caption next to it or something like that. That is basically what they are trying to make illegal, because a lot of these memes are copyrighted material. You're taking basically the property of somebody else and then you are creatively doing something to it to create a new product, even though you're using an existing copywriting product, and then putting it out there. And if Article 13 sticks and is enforced, what we're going to see is the large platforms like Google, Facebook, etc., basically having to create some kind of scanning technology so that if somebody uploads, like let's say I take a famous picture, you know, that is copyrighted, you know, Ansel Adams, you know, take your pick, whatever, and I do something funky to it and I upload it, the scanning engine on Facebook or Google or, you know, whatever is going to see that and say, oh, this is a copyright violation, and not let me put up my funny picture of the day or whatever this is. And that actually has very interesting ramifications, because it may fundamentally transform One, the creative process that a lot of people go through when they are developing music or pictures or text or whatever it is. And you know, we've seen some organizations already do this. So SoundCloud, for example, which is where the podcast form of this radio show is, they have scanning and filtering to make sure that I am not uploading copyrighted material. So the, for example, the intro and exit music you hear on my show, basically I have a license to use that. I paid for a license to use that for the show. But if I put up, you know, I don't know, take your pick, you know, a famous artist, you know, their song, I would technically be in violation of their copyright unless I'm paying for that. And then how is SoundCloud going to know that unless I'm submitting paperwork to SoundCloud saying I do have the rights to play, you know, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or, you know, U2, you know, take your pick. And so that is going to fundamentally transform that for a lot of these developers as well as a lot of these major platforms. Not to mention the fact that smaller platforms that are startups or trying to break into a bigger market, you know, may not have the resources to be able to do this on a very effective level. And so we may see some fundamental transformations in how we are accessing, using, and playing with the internet here as a result of this serious thing. Because if Facebook is developing this just for the EU, there's no reason why they couldn't then just start applying it worldwide, which may actually make their lives easier in terms of detecting threats. And when you're looking at Facebook and Google coming under fire, you know, for not being able to properly filter out things like, you know, pornography or deeply offensive imagery, such as like, you know, ISIS beheading someone, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, they may just be ramping all of this up thinking, you know what, it's easier for us to do this. And so we may see this fundamentally transform the internet, and it's going to be very curious to see how this unfolds. But that is your very interesting European Union probably affecting the world news of today. And in holy crap, this is literally going to affect all of us news. We are talking about something called Firebase. Now, if you're not familiar with Firebase is actually a Google product that a lot of app developers use on both Android and iPhone platforms to develop their products or store the data. So if you've got an app, for example, you know, if you're using an app and let's say it's storing data like your username, your password, let's say personal information you've given the app, Firebase may be one of those places that uses this. Now, Firebase is home to literally thousands and thousands of apps that have a combined aggregate download of over 640 million downloads and installs across Android and iPhone. And it was just found that many developers are basically taking shortcuts when developing to Firebase, and a lot of records have been exposed, to the tune of over 100 million records have been exposed in Firebase among various apps that basically have a whole bunch of data about us. It could be usernames and passwords, very sensitive information, and it's across all verticals. So we have banks in here. We have medical apps that have HIPAA compliant data for insurance companies, all that, ride sharing, games. I mean, you name it. Basically, the vertical of app is sitting here, and a lot of them are in Firebase, and a lot of them are exposed. And so some of the apps that you have may be exposed. Now, this just recently came to light due to research by an outfit called AppThority, and hopefully a lot of these developers are making changes, and Google is really stressing the point to the developers that are using Firebase. So this is a huge, huge thing that we need to combat right now. But just please be aware that the apps you're running may be vulnerable, and there's not much we can do about it at the moment except possibly limit what we are giving those apps. And in Internet of Things news, if you have a Freddy, F-R-E-D-I, which is a Wi-Fi baby monitor, it can be exploited and turned into a spy cam. And now we see a lot of this with Internet of Things, with IoT devices, where the developers that put out these very intuitive products that we all love to use, we just assume are safe, and they've actually cut corners to rush them to market, or they just didn't put cybersecurity on the forefront of their development strategy. And so now hackers are actually able to bypass a lot of the basic security defenses or inadequate security defenses in the Freddy Wi-Fi baby monitor to allow a hacker to remotely attack and use this without having to authenticate. So it's a very serious problem with this. And if you have a Freddy baby Wi-Fi monitor, you might want to make sure that there is actually patching and updating from Freddy to hopefully fix this issue and this loophole. And also, I would make sure that you are not exposing your Freddy baby monitor to the internet. A lot of these like to have ports open on firewalls so that you can remote access and all of that. And that's a serious problem when it comes to network security, if it's done incorrectly or if it's done in a very generic way that allows the world to therefore get into this. So Freddy Wi-Fi baby monitor people, make sure your products are up to date, or if you can't find up to date, I would seriously recommend switching to a more hardened product. So that is your IoT news of the day. And in medical privacy issues, if you are using MedAssociates or affiliated with MedAssociates, basically logging in, they recently suffered a data breach and approximately 270,000 patient records were compromised after they suffered this data breach. Now, the MedAssociates confirms that the breach data may have included personal details of the patients. However, the investigations are still going on about this matter. And they later came out and said that they are confirming no misuse of breached data. In their official notice, they confirmed no breach of financial details, nor have they noticed any misuse of leaked information. And I quote, "There was no banking or credit card information contained on or accessible from the workstation. Additionally, we are currently not aware of any misuse of patients' protected health and or personal information." And so basically what they're saying is, yep, we got breached, but we haven't seen any malfeasance yet. And that's actually going to be a very interesting position to take, because it may take some time to absolutely disseminate. And when we are doing things like monitoring the dark web, which is one of the things that, you know, we do here in the cybersecurity world, that's what we offer to our clients, it may take weeks or months for the data from MedAssociates to actually start really filtering through all the identity theft forums and everything else that you see in the dark web. And so it is kind of important to make sure that you are locking down your personal information as best you can. And if you do use MedAssociates, you might want to make sure you've got alert outs on your credit card. And as always, make sure things like your credit score from Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, all of those are perpetually frozen, because you very rarely use your credit. So in that sense. So MedAssociates users, that's your news of the week. And I'm sorry that you guys are in that boat, but please make sure you're protecting yourself. And in processor hardware news, it seems like Intel has been in the news like every other week with some kind of newly discovered flaw in the Intel processors that we're all using. So, take your pick. If you have an Intel processor, an i7, an i5, a Xeon, whatever you have, there have been specific flaws that have come up. Spectre was one of the huge ones that came out. And a new one has literally just come out called TL Bleed. Now, the researchers found that this is what's called a side channel vulnerability, and I'm not going to dive into the specifics of a side channel vulnerability, because this is a show for everybody, not just nerds, but this vulnerability may allow attackers to extract cryptographic keys from apps. Now, here's the kicker to the whole thing. I think Intel's probably beleaguered, but Intel has come out and said they do not consider the TL Bleed vulnerability to be really important enough to be discussed. And I think what they're saying is this is a very minor issue right now. I'm sure we'll patch it, et cetera, but there's no need to really, dive into this, which, I mean, okay, we've got a free and open news society here. And so people in the cybersecurity community absolutely want to talk about this, because this is another serious flaw in already the serious flaws that have come out. Like I mentioned, Spectre, and then there was Meltdown and a few others as well. And we continue to see how far the rabbit hole goes down with, processors. And to be fair, it's not just Intel. AMD had Spectre Meltdown issues as well as some other processors, and it's how they execute code and all that. But we're going to see where this goes. But the TL Bleed vulnerability, we're going to be looking for patches for those sooner than later. And so if you're running an Intel processor, and I know the vast majority of you are out there, when you have a laptop, whether it's Mac or Windows or whatever, you need to make sure that when patches are coming out, you are indeed updating, because we don't want hackers stealing your app data live from your computer. So keep that in mind as you're computing out there. And in privacy news, this comes out of the UK. Now, a UK-based privacy group called Big Brother Watch has found out that the British tax agency, the HMRC, which actually stands for Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, has been recording the voices of over 5.1 million British citizens. Now, basically, what this stems from is the HRMC collected voice records via the Voice ID service that they launched in January of 2017. Now, the service was created to allow UK citizens to authenticate when calling HMRC centers using their voice, basically a security measure. Now, when the service was initially launched, the tax agency claimed that users would be able to opt out of using it and continue to authenticate themselves by the usual methods. You know, well, I, here it would be Social Security and all that, but whatever the equivalent in the UK would be. Now, this group, the Big Brother Watch Group, discovered that there is actually no opt-out option when UK citizens call the agency's support line. And so every citizen accessing the service recorded a voice track to use with the Voice ID authentication service, and there was no ability to opt out. And so basically, it is a government agency in the UK building a biometrics database based on voice recognition. And we've seen many governments, not just the UK, but, you know, our government alone, you know, using these kinds of things such as facial recognition and all of that. And so from a privacy standpoint, this is obviously a very serious issue because, you know, if we're looking at this, corporations can record our voices, can do all of this. Google, for example, offers Google Voice for free, which gives you a free phone number and voicemail. And so what they do is, as they're recording the voicemail you're getting, they are actually translating that to improve their voice recognition system, could also use it to advance advertise to us. So if I get a voicemail talking about, oh, I don't know, Chevy cars, you know, take your pick. Maybe I'm going to start getting advertisements from Chevy dealers. So it's that kind of thing. And on the government side, it's just another way to track you. So keep that in mind. I'm wondering if that'll come to the United States, but that is your privacy news for this broadcast. You're listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show. We'll be back right after this quick message.